Good evening. This is Heartstock Radio. Thank you so much for tuning in. I'm Carol Murphy, your host. And remember that we're on Facebook. You can ask us questions and just chat with us there at Heartstock Radio. And we have a great program this evening, something that I'm really personally excited to learn more about. Our guest today is Allison Lingane. And she is one of the founders of an organization called Project Equity. Just a moment, we will be back, and Allison will introduce herself. Thanks for listening. This is Heartstock.
As I went walking at Ribena Highway, I saw
the song that you're listening to is our newly recorded theme song. And once again, I'd like to thank all of the folks, especially Anna Nelson Shaw, whose name I had written down but neglected to mention last time. Many of you know Anna Nelson Shaw, and she's pretty darn amazing. Clark Chateau, Kevin Cook, Clark Grant, and Heidi Schnarr with all of her children of her children's choir at camp at the Clark Chateau this summer. And this evening, our guest is Allison Lingane. Hi, Allison.
Hello, it's a pleasure to be here.
Thank you so much for sharing your wealth of knowledge. You and I have spoken previously, and pretty darn cool employee ownership. And I aspire to have an employee-owned business at some point in the near future. So Allison, tell our listeners a little bit about your story, how you came to be in this line of business and your career path. Tell us a little bit about who you are.
Yeah, absolutely. So, maybe just first a little bit about my organization. It's called Project Equity, and we're a national nonprofit organization, as Carol mentioned, focused on employee ownership. Which is a concept and a business model that is highly underrepresented in our economy, yet has tremendous, tremendous benefits. And so, yeah, I often get asked, well, how did you end up focusing on employee ownership since it's something so few people have heard about? And my own path here was I started off straight out of college running job training programs at a local, really a neighborhood-based youth organization. And quickly learned that I think we've made great strides in the 20 plus years since then, but quickly learned that many job training programs are helping people get trained for poverty level jobs. So we're not really creating a path to prosperity for people to be able to follow. So while I was there, we were able to create a micro enterprise program, sort of as the young people could get promoted into it. And just the day and night difference of, you know, showing up for really a very low skilled job versus showing up for a job where you are asked to bring your full self, your own creativity, your capabilities to create something and grow it in this micro enterprise program. It was amazing to see that difference, to really see the light bulbs going off in the young people's heads. So I was there for about 5 years, and I left to gain a set of skills. I felt like we were on to something, you know, this difference, and that I wanted to be able to learn some skills to scale amazing programs that were having deep impact on people's lives. So I went and got a business degree, and then felt like I needed some real life experience in the business world. So I spent about 15 years in mission-driven companies that were doing great things to try and create real change for people, mostly in the education space. And, you know, along that path, I never heard anything about employee ownership. It never was taught in business school. And then along the way, somebody introduced me to who is now my co-founder, Hillary Abell, who had been working in the field of employee ownership with worker co-ops in particular as a community economic development strategy. And when I learned more about what this business model looks like and how it's really designed from the inside out to have employees making the business decisions through the lens of what's good for them, frankly, for and by extension, their families and their communities. And I learned some about the outcomes and the quality jobs and all of these components. It just made sense, just clicked for me. And so then the question became, okay, well, why are there so few of them? And what can we do about it? And so how can we work to scale this business model that has so much to offer?
So I'd like to back up just a tiny little tad bit and talk a little bit about what you did before you decided to go on to this path, before you went to Harvard. And yeah, what led you to where you are now?
Yeah, so I've always really seen business as a tool, as a force that can be used for good. And you know, it was interesting when I was in business school at UC Berkeley at the Haas School of Business. It was right in the time of the dot-com boom, you know, on the West Coast. The internet was just being created and everyone was going to become a multimillionaire by creating their internet company. And a small group of us created a business plan competition for businesses designed to do good in the world. We called it the Social Venture Business Plan Competition. And it's still going strong. It's now called the Global Social Venture Competition. It's international across many continents. But it was the business school sort of looked at us and said, you know, we already have a business plan competition. Why do we need another one? And we said, well, we need another one because we need to emphasize in the criteria, the ones that we are going to be picking as winners, the ones that are going to be creating explicitly through their business, creating positive change in the world. And so that's how I see my path. I worked for a number of really interesting companies along the way. Prior to co-founding Project Equity, I was at a company called Inside Track, which helps college students stay on track to graduation through an intervention called coaching. So one-on-one executive style coaching that was proven in over 100 randomized controlled studies to keep students on track to graduation. And it makes sense if you help people understand what their goals are and keep them motivated to stay on track to those goals, and people will be more likely to reach them. So I think that's always been a theme through everything that I've done, is it's about helping people recognize their own potential and tap into their own potential to really reach the goals that matter most to them.
So where did you grow up? I always like to ask these interesting questions because I'm fascinated.
I grew up in many different places. I was born in Minneapolis, and then I moved to a suburb of Boston for about the first 7 years of my life. And then I moved back to the middle of the country. I moved to Oklahoma, to a small town in Oklahoma, for about another 7 years. And then my family moved out to California just in time for me to start high school. So I've seen different parts of the country.
Yeah, that's very cool because you saw various different slices of Americana. And I think that gives you some special insight. So let's talk just a little bit more about employee ownership. I know that there are different types and different ways that folks can organize that in their business. But let's talk just a little bit before we get into the details of that about the importance of it and the impacts that both statistically have been proven out and what you've seen.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, I think the starting point for folks to understand employee ownership is just thinking about the small business. Just a regular old small business in your community, and you think about the impact that the owner, the being a business owner has on that owner, on their family, right? In terms of it being a back to this concept of a pathway to prosperity, right? That it can be very powerful to be a business owner. And then you think about, well, gosh, not all of us were born to be entrepreneurs, right? There's a certain personality of that entrepreneurial drive. And so for sort of the rest of us who may not be born to be entrepreneurs, this ability to go into business ownership as a shared entrepreneurship endeavor can be very powerful. And so at its essence, that's really what employee ownership is. It's a group of people who together are owning this business together are making at least the high level strategic decisions. And we can talk about, you know, more about how those decisions get made. There's usually a representative democracy, a board of directors, but are making those decisions together and are benefiting from the fruits of their labor, again, together. So it can be very powerful at many different levels. So at the level of the individual, of the individual employee or, you know, the employee owner, at the level of the business itself, there have been lots of studies demonstrating that employee-owned companies outlast their competitors in business cycle downturns, you know, all of these positive outcomes around business efficiency, et cetera. And then when you reach enough scale, enough within the community to be really representing this approach, there can be profound community level impacts as well. So to talk about at the level of the employee, there was a recent study done by a wonderful organization called the National Center for Employee Ownership in 2017. And they published a study showing that people who work in employee-owned companies make a third again as much, so 33% more than people in sort of peer, you know, similar kinds of companies, similar jobs, you know, in the same industry. So, you know, wouldn't we all love to make a third as much as we're making now, right? It also showed that people stick around longer in their jobs. So they tend to move around between jobs less. Their job tenure is half again as long, so 50% higher. And then at the end of the day, the amount that they're worth, you know, the amount of assets, it's called household net worth, is almost double. So it's about 92% higher. So, you know, these are real meaningful ways that people's lives are improved, both financially and in, you know, in terms of stability. And then there's, you know, do you think about voice and participation and professional development opportunities? You know, how many people in their regular job have the opportunity to be elected to be on the board of their company? And what a great opportunity that is to be able to gain that experience and to gain that insight into how business works. So lots of benefits up and down the line. And you know, what we specialize in is we help companies transition to become employee-owned. So they're already up and running, they're already profitable and successful. And then oftentimes it's at the point where the owner may be retiring or sort of laying the groundwork for their retirement. And one of the companies that we worked with recently, they're in the San Francisco Bay Area, and they're called Niles Pie. And they became a worker cooperative about a year ago. And about 6 months after they made that transition, so they started profit sharing with the employee owners. And one of the new employee owners, her name is Sarah, she got a profit sharing check. It's called a patronage check. She got a profit sharing check, and it was the biggest check she had ever gotten in her life. She happens to be a single mom. And one of the things that she did was she sat down with her 11-year-old son, Addison, and she said to him, you know what, you've also had to sacrifice for me to be a business owner. You know, I've had these meetings, I've had these other responsibilities. And so I want you to be able with the slice, a small slice of this check that I got, I want you to think about what we want to do with this money. So you think about the ripple effects. It's not just the money, right? It's not just the professional development, but it's also now her son sees her mom as a business owner, as a leader of that business and in her community.
So on the local level, it's just interesting to me if you compare like a big corporation, like, you know, just pull one out of the air, Google, compared to an employee-owned business. Why is it that the big corporations, I mean, maybe Google isn't the best example, but what is it about big corporations and non-employee-owned businesses? Why do they lag behind?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's a couple of things. You know, when you think about a local economy, one of the things that economists or economic development folks think about is how many times does a single dollar circulate in our economy before it gets spent somewhere else outside of our local economy. So for locally owned businesses, that spending multiplier is really important. And, you know, it can be three times what the spending multiplier is of a dollar that gets spent at a publicly held company or a privately held company where the owners are shareholders in other parts, other regions of the state or country. So that dollar that gets circulated in the local economy, it means it's getting spent on other small businesses, which are creating more jobs locally. So all of these positive benefits within the economy. So that's just one thing that holds true, whether you're employee owned or not, just the fact that it's locally owned. But I think the elements of employee ownership that really lead to some of those increased business outcomes, as well as benefits for the individual employee owners, they really are about participation and voice. You and your listeners are probably very familiar with the difference between walking into a store where you've got somebody at the checkout who kind of could care less, you know, they're kind of figuring out when their next break is, or walking into a store where, you know, maybe it's the owner who's taking your money at the cashier. And it's just a very different experience. Right. You've got somebody who's building relationship with you, who cares about your needs, who lives in your community. Right. You've got all of these benefits. And so when you've got a group of people who are employee owners, you've got that ownership mentality throughout the business, so that when, you know, day to day, when I'm doing my work, I'm doing it through the lens of what's going to make the business be successful, because that ultimately helps me, helps my coworkers, you know, and so on and so forth.
Yeah, it creates much more of a direct correlation between what I'm doing day to day on the job and how I will benefit directly from providing, you know, being the best employee I can, essentially.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
So we're a little over our halfway point. We're going to take a quick music break. We'll be right back. This is Heartstock. Good evening, this is Heartstock. I'm Carol Murphy, and thank you so much again for listening. This evening we have Allison Lingane here, and it's a topic that is near and dear to my heart. I think that this, just locally here in Butte and for other communities that, it's kind of a long story, but I'll cut it short. Here in Butte, you know, we've had some changes in our economy, and I really think that this employee ownership concept is something that a lot of communities like Butte could also benefit from. And Allison, let's talk a little bit more about how, if I'm an employer or a business owner and I'm really intrigued by this idea, tell our listeners a little bit about how one goes about establishing an employee-owned business, and what are some of the legal structures and the different possibilities there?
Yeah, absolutely. Let me start with the legal structures, and then I'll go back to sort of a quick process overview. There are many different forms of employee ownership. There's three main structures. There's about, in the United States, about 7,000 employee-owned companies. Most of those are organized in what's called an employee stock ownership plan, or ESOP for short. And in its essence, it's a trust that holds the stock of the company on behalf of the employees as a retirement benefit. So similar to the way companies set up 401ks as retirement benefit, an ESOP feels like a retirement benefit from the employee perspective. You can also, so one of the benefits of an ESOP is there can be significant tax breaks to the selling owner, as well as to the employee-owned company if it's 100% owned by the ESOP. So it's a trust structure. You can also set up a trust structure that doesn't have those tax benefits, but it also means it's much lower cost to set up and manage because you don't have to, there's not a lot of regulation, not the same level anyway of regulation. So an employee ownership trust, an ESOP, or a worker-owned cooperative. And many people are familiar with other forms of cooperatives, consumer cooperatives like the REI store or farmer cooperatives. You know, there's Ocean Spray is a farmer cooperative. Organic Valley is a farmer cooperative. And a worker cooperative is a business owned and governed by and for the benefit of its workers. So those are the three main structures. And, you know, there's sort of pros and cons between them, but it's really more about what's the fit. And a big component of the fit is the size of the company. So ESOPs in particular are really only for businesses above a certain size threshold. And the other two forms can be used for businesses of any size. So yeah, so for business owners that are interested and intrigued by this idea of, you know, hey, I'm starting to think about retirement, or hey, this sounds like a great way to really engage my employees. I'm not planning to retire, but I want to integrate employee ownership. You know, sort of the first step is how do you make this, it's a sale of the business to an employee-owned company. How do you make that financially feasible? What does that look like from what's the structure that's the right fit, and how do you want to integrate some level of participation or democratic control by employees? So what's the financial or the sale agreement, and then what's the design of the employee-owned company, and then the support and the training so that everyone involved can learn how to do this and how to do it well.
And what if you want a employee-owned business from the get-go? Say you're not necessarily getting ready to retire.
Yeah. So if you're working on a startup idea and you wanted to organize as an employee-owned business, you would most likely choose a worker cooperative structure. And that can be set up. Most states have worker co-op statutes. So you can set up as a cooperative corporation, or you could set up as an LLC and operate on a cooperative basis. So your operating agreement would define things like the governance, the board structure, the profit sharing, how that all works, and how one becomes an owner. So usually you don't become an owner on day one of employment. Usually there's what's called a candidacy period before you become an employee owner, sort of like dating before getting married.
Oh, that's an interesting analogy. So as a retiring business owner and you want your employees, you'd like to offer that to your employees. Can you walk us through how does that look? I mean, if I'm a business owner and I'm retiring, I can sell it to my employees, or I can try and sell it to somebody else who wants to be a sole proprietor type owner. Mm-hmm. What are the pros and cons there? It just seems like such a win to sell it to the employees, but you know, there may be some choices there to juggle and decisions to be made.
Yeah. So you know, there are some business owners that have been either cultivating a buyer, you know, maybe there's a big corporation that wants to come in and buy them, right? Or they have been cultivating somebody in the community to come in and take over the business and buy it from them when they retire. But those are the vast minority. So that's not the case for most people. Most people are, you know, say, oh gosh, how do I start? How do I sell my business? And are more likely to call a business broker. You know, and a business broker they can help match buyers and sellers, and there's a transaction fee. It's usually about 12% of the sale price of the business. And it, you know, sometimes it works out, sometimes it doesn't, and you're handing over the reins to somebody else who you've recently met, maybe don't know much about them. You kind of don't know what they're going to do with your business. And so we always ask business owners the legacy question. You know, imagine 5 years after you sold your company, what do you want to be looking back on? what do you want to see in terms of how successful the business is, in terms of, you know, especially for businesses where there's a real mission, whether that mission is, you know, quality service or the best product in my category or whatever it may be, or a socially or environmental mission, you know, how, what do you want your mission to look like? How about all the people involved? Yes, your employees for sure, your vendors, your customers, you want them to be well taken care of. And to then think about these different options for selling their business and line them up against those legacy priorities. And, you know, the truth of the matter is that an employee ownership transition, assuming you have the right supports to do it, to make it successful, really checks the boxes down the line in terms of all of those legacy considerations. And, you know, you should be able to get as much for your business through an employee ownership transition as you would get through a business broker. And that's where that financial feasibility comes in as the first step. Let's see what that looks like. Can the business afford to buy itself out of its future profits at the sale price that the business has been valued at?
So essentially the bank loans the money to the employees and the employees pay the bank back slowly over time. Is that how it works?
Yeah. Usually the selling owner will keep a note, 30%, 50%. And that's not abnormal if you're talking about a business broker situation. That's often a required part of those arrangements as well. And then a lender, which is most often going to be a community development financial institution versus a bank. So it's a federally regulated lending institution that has a community mission. So a CDFI will usually come in for the remainder. And it's the company itself that's taking out the loan. So the employee-owned company is taking out the loan to buy the business from the seller.
We've got just a couple minutes left. And I was hoping on your website, you talked about the silver tsunami that's approaching quite a bit.
Yes.
Can you speak about that just a bit here?
So the silver tsunami, which is, you know, the wave of retiring baby boomers. And most folks aren't aware that baby boomers own nearly one out of every two locally owned companies with employees in our country. So if you just close your eyes and think about all the locally owned companies, you know that employ people, and you imagine that one out of two of them is going to possibly go away over the next, you know, 10, 15, you know, maybe a few years beyond that, if they don't have buyers, then, you know, that's a sort of a scary proposition. And the people who work in those companies represent one out of six people employed nationwide. So this is for us both something to be concerned about, right? Because we believe in local economies and local business ownership, but it's also a real opportunity, because if we can tap this to have a significant number of companies be sold to their employees, we just have this tremendous opportunity to deepen the local ownership and the breadth of that ownership, and to begin to address, you know, some of the real gaps we have in terms of quality jobs and income and wealth inequality that we have in our communities today.
So it's time, in other words.
It is time. The time is now. Absolutely.
In just the few minutes that we have, well, actually less than a minute, how might folks reach you?
Yeah. So our website is project-equity.org. Or if you just search Project Equity Employee Ownership in Google, you'll find us pretty easily. And we do, you know, we have a contact us form on the site. And if there are business owners that are interested in learning more, we do offer a free consult to companies to hop on the phone and help them learn more about this option and how it might apply to them.
Fantastic. This is Heartstock, and we are out of time. It's been a pleasure, Allison. Thank you so much for being with us. And
thank you so much.
Telling us all about what you're doing. It's been a pleasure.
Pleasure as well on my end.
We'll see everybody next week. This is Heartstock, and I'm Carol Murphy. Bye-bye.
And on the sign it said, no trespass.
Heartstock Radio is a production of KBMF 102.5, Butte America Radio. Hear our live programs every Friday at 5 p.m. Mountain Standard Time via live stream at ButteAmericaRadio.org.